Carl Bright's jacket was suddenly too tight, and Nathan couldn't breathe properly. He pulled it off and kicked it under the couch. Xander wandered in, dressed in Cameron's only suit, then stalled in the doorway as Nathan and Bub both stared at him. The suit fit like it had been made to measure, and Xander looked taller and broader and older than Nathan had ever seen him. "Grandma told me to wear it," Xander said, looking down. "But maybe it's fine," Nathan said. "Looks good, mate." Xander helped first Bub, then Nathan fix their ties properly. Nathan stood face to face with his son, watching him looping the fabric around him. Nathan could hear him breathe and see a tiny patch of dark stubble where he'd missed a spot shaving. He could see the small scar on his hairline where he'd fallen off a horse when he was 5. He watched the slight narrowing of eyes that would have been blue like Jackie's when he was born but had turned brown like Nathan's within a year. Nathan suddenly wanted Xander to be small enough again that he could pick him up and hold him. Instead, he stood there feeling uncomfortable in his borrowed suit. "Xander, listen, about yesterday. Finished. Better?" Xander pulled the tie tight and stepped away. He looked over at Bub, who was staring at Cameron's painting. "Hey, do you think the painting might upset people today with that story about the stockman wandering off?" "No one believes that shit," Bub said, not turning around. He took a sip of his beer and pointed the bottleneck at the grave. "He raped an Aboriginal girl and got himself killed for it. Everyone knows that. Don't know why he gets so much bloody glory." "Is that true?" Xander said, looking to Nathan, who shook his head. It was true there were plenty of white blokes who had done all that and worse, but not in this case. He opened his mouth but was cut short by a noise outside. Bub turned to the window. "It's here," he said. Nathan and Xander joined him at the glass. Out on the driveway, the funeral director's black four-wheel drive was pulling up. It had been modified to carry 6-foot-long cargo in the back. The vehicle may have been shiny when it set off from St. Helens, but the journey had branded it with the same grit and grime as everything else. At the homestead fence, Ilse stood watching its arrival, flanked on either side by her daughter's small figures. Together they looked like a flock of birds, all in black, the edges of their skirts catching feather-like in the wind. Far beyond them, Nathan could just make out a distant billow of dust. The neighbours were arriving. The service was brisk and to the point, conducted by a chaplain from St. Helens, who at least seemed to understand that however much Cameron Bright might be missed, it didn't make the sun any less hot. The freshly turned soil around the grave was already dry and flaky, and the shade of the gum tree wasn't enough for those sweltering in their once-a-year outfits. Nathan stood in his shirt sleeves and his fancy knotted tie and looked around the crowd with a strangely detached interest. There were maybe 40 there, he counted, as they all fidgeted in their town clothes and best hats. A good turnout. Excellent, in fact. He hadn't seen most of them in years, but he recognised about 2/3. Old Tom, young Tom, Kylie from the service station, with a couple of kids in tow now, and Jeff, who used to be her boyfriend and now looked to be her husband. That dickhead engineer had been based out at Atherton for years. Nathan couldn't remember his name, there were so many dickheads over at Atherton. Steve from the clinic, of course. No Glenn, but no surprise there. Nathan had phoned the police station that morning and had been diverted again. Sergeant McKenna was still clearing up from that tour bus spill in the north. Did Nathan want to leave another message? "Just ask him to call me," he'd said finally, and hung up. Nathan didn't know the chaplain, and from the generalised phrases he was leaning on, felt sure the guy had never actually met Cameron. Nathan mostly tuned out the service and stared at his neighbours, taking in the greying hair and the extra kilos. Most of them stared back, curious and with a slightly bewildered air, like they'd almost forgotten that he really existed. Liz nearly made it through. The dreadful keening started in her throat as the chaplain neared the end and grew to an eerie crescendo by the time Sophie and Lo were invited forward to plant a small sapling at the head of the grave. Liz's shoulders heaved, and her cries were muffled as she buried her face in her sleeve. Harry whispered something, taking her arm and attempting to lead her away, but she shook him off violently. Lo, eyes wide and trowel quivering in her hand, took one look and started to wail herself, followed quickly by Sophie. Ilse took a swift step forward, scooping them close to her and ushering them towards the house.
"But what about the tree?"
Lo's voice floated back, high-pitched through her sobs.
"We're supposed to plant the tree."
Without a word, Liz picked up the discarded trowel and dropped to her knees. She dug, hard and fast, stabbing the blade into the loose soil as the dust flew up and clung to the dark fabric of her dress. Her grief was the raw and messy kind, and Nathan could see people glancing away uncomfortable. The act of memorial had taken a voyeuristic turn, and eventually he couldn't stand it any longer. He stepped forward, picked up the other trowel and dug with her. As soon as the hole was big enough, Liz grabbed the sapling and shoved it in, covering it loosely with the grainy earth. It wouldn't survive, Nathan thought. It wasn't deep enough. But at least it was done. He stood up and helped Liz towards the house, ignoring the gawping eyes of his neighbours as they watched him leave. Chapter 29. An hour later, Liz had been tucked up in her darkened bedroom with a mild sedative supplied by Steve, and Nathan found himself standing alone by the lounge room door. The room was fuller than he'd ever seen it, and despite the heat, some of the crowd had spilled into the hall and out onto the veranda. They left a self-conscious clearing around Cameron's painting, though, Nathan noticed. "At least no one's touching it," Nathan heard the voice by his side. Ilse was looking past him at the picture. "I thought we should take it down." She frowned. "No, not at his funeral. People would ask about it. It's Cam's legacy. He would have wanted it there for everyone to see." There was a faint note in her tone he couldn't quite make out over the noise. "That's what Bub said too." "Did he?" "Pretty much. And Mum." "They're right." They probably were, Nathan thought now. The guests may have been keeping a respectful distance, but they all threw snatched glances towards the painting, curious but reluctant to appear ghoulish. He saw Katie squeeze through the doorway and into the crowd holding a tray of sandwiches. Instead of passing them around, she dumped the tray on a table and walked straight back out. Ilse watched her with narrowed eyes. "God, they're useless, both of them." A pause. "I could sack them," she added suddenly, realization dawning in her voice. "You might not have to. I think they're planning to leave." "Still, I could, if I wanted to." "Yeah, I suppose so." A woman with shoulder-length strawberry blonde hair caught Ilse's eye across the room and raised her hand in a small wave. "Who's that?" Nathan said. "I don't know. I thought she was waving at you." "I don't think so." The woman waved again, a little hesitant now, and Ilse sighed. "I'd better go and speak to a few people anyway. I'll talk to you later." Nathan sipped his beer and watched her make her way over to the woman in the corner. Ilse offered her hand, and they exchanged a few words, their heads tilted close to hear each other over the chatter. Then Ilse turned and pointed to Nathan. She said something else, and the woman thanked her and threaded her way through the crowd towards him. "Nathan, hello. It was actually you I was waving at," the woman said once she was in front of him. She gave an embarrassed smile. "You don't remember me. That's okay. It's Melanie. Birch? From Atherton."
"Melanie,"
he was struggling. "From Atherton, or I was, anyway, for a few years, and now I'm back." She gave a self-conscious laugh. "Don't worry, I was a couple of years behind you, so I don't think you even noticed me then, but I was friends with Jackie when you two were dating."
"Oh, right. I don't..."
He was still struggling, but at least she was still smiling. "Jackie and I have been divorced a while, so..."
"Oh. Me too,"
she shrugged. "City bloke. Didn't work out, surprise, surprise, so after that I went travelling for a while. Was out west for a couple of years and now I've ended up here again, still working with the horses."
"Right."
Nathan could now just about picture the girl he sometimes saw around at the Gymkhana's, part of Jackie's loose circle, a strawberry blonde ponytail and freckles in the summer. There weren't loads of young people around, but they came and went with surprising frequency to schools and jobs and other places. He wasn't sure he'd ever known her name was Melanie, having only really had eyes for Jackie. Melanie was pretty, though, both then and now. "I'm sorry to hear about you and Jackie. That's a shame. I thought you'd work out. You were so good together." She hesitated, as if deciding how much to say, then gave him a small sideways smile. "We were all horribly jealous of her because there were so many assholes and never any good guys, and she grabbed you so quickly. She was always telling us how much fun you two were having and how you made her laugh."
"Really?"
Didn't sound like Jackie. Not at the end, anyway. Although, the memories were buried pretty deep. Perhaps at the start. At the start, Nathan might have said the same about her. He looked at Melanie properly this time. "So, how do you like being back?" "It's very quiet. I'd forgotten." "Yeah, it is. Quite quiet." Nathan's mind was utterly blank. He couldn't think of a single thing to say. Across the room, he saw Ilse glance towards them, then immediately look away. She was being talked at by an older woman who Nathan didn't recognize. "Anyway," Melanie said, "listen, I'm so sorry about Cameron, and I completely realize this isn't an ideal time. But I wasn't sure when I might run into you again, so I wanted to say hi. I mean, I don't know if you're ever in town."
"I'm not. Hardly ever."
"Oh." She blinked, then recovered. "Well, if you ever were and wanted to catch up for a drink or something, let me know." "Oh, okay. You can call me over at Atherton. And it's Melanie." "Melanie, yeah, I know. Got it." "Good. Okay, then." She smiled. And as she turned to move away, she touched his arm lightly in a way that no one had touched Nathan for a very long time. The heat of her fingertips lingered on his skin so clear and sharp it was almost painful. He watched her blend back into the crowd, then jumped as Harry suddenly appeared at his side.
"I'm going to be honest, mate. I'm not sure you're in any position to play hard to get."
Harry handed him a fresh beer.
"Jesus, Harry, I don't even think that's what she was..."
"Well, you'll never know if you don't try, will you? You should give her a call. Start showing your face in town a bit."
"She's been away. She won't know. About all that business with Keith. She will if she's based at Atherton. They'll have said something. No question. Still, I don't know. I'll think about it."
"Do. Because you're not making it easy, mate."
"Easy for who?"
"Anyone. Them, you."
Harry nodded at the crowd.
"At least give them a chance to forgive you."
"I did my begging 10 years ago. It didn't work out well."
"No one's asking you to do that. Just meet them halfway, or a bit more maybe. A lot of time's gone by."
"Same faces."
"Some. Some not."
Harry dropped his voice.
"And a couple of them have been asking about you. Young Tom, Jeff, asking what you've been up to. Look at them. They know that could have easily been you we buried out there. Still could be one day soon if they're not careful, and that'd be something they'd all have to live with. This kind of thing brings things into perspective, puts people in a forgiving mood."
"Yeah?
Well, good on them." "I'm just saying, mate."
Nathan shrugged. Across the room, he could see Bub chatting to a group of blokes about his age. Over in the corner, Ilse had escaped the older woman and was now talking to Steve. They were standing apart from the other mourners in the no man's land under the painting. Ilse had her head close to Steve's and looked to be speaking in a low voice. She was saying something, her face unusually agitated while Steve pursed his lips. When Ilse stopped, the nurse shook his head. He opened his mouth to respond, but she cut him off and started whispering again, more urgently this time. The crowd shifted and resettled, and Nathan lost sight of them. He leaned back against the wall. It was hot in the room, and the chatter suddenly sounded loud. Nathan put down his beer and reached for the water jug on the nearest table. It was empty, as were two others he could see. "I'm going to fill these up," he said to Harry. Harry shrugged.
"I'm telling you, mate, you're not doing yourself any favours hiding away today."
Nathan didn't reply. The kitchen was no cooler, but at least it was quiet.
Katie was standing alone by the sink, staring out of the window. She started as Nathan clattered the jugs on the draining board.
"Oh, sorry," she said. "I thought you were Simon."
"No. Where is he anyway?"
"I don't know."
Nathan checked the fridge. No cold water in there. He went back to the sink. The water ran hot from both taps, but it would have to do.
"Listen."
He held the jug under the stream. "You two might be planning to hit the road soon, but you're still on the payroll today."
"I know, I'm sorry. I don't feel 100%.
Katie leaned against the counter, and Nathan saw that her face was in fact a little pale. Maybe it wasn't a great idea to have her serving food, he thought. "You all right?"
"It's probably the heat."
"The nurse is around. Do you want me to get him?"
No, thanks."
She went over to the table and picked up another tray of sandwiches. Nathan watched as she put it straight back down again, a pained look on her face. "Look," he said, "we'll manage. Go and lie down if you're ill." "Who's ill?" Simon stood at the door with an empty tray in his hand.
"No one," Katie said. "I'm just a bit hot. Let's get back to work."
She swapped Simon's empty tray for the full one.
"You take that and I'll take these."
She picked up the water jugs and flashed a smile. It looked almost real.
"And everyone's happy."
She walked out of the kitchen and after a beat, Simon followed. Nathan watched them go. Out in the hallway himself, he could hear the sound of chatter louder now as more people spilled out from the cramped living room. Nathan could see a few faces he recognised. Maybe he should go and try to talk to them. Go and find Melanie even. Try to think of something to say this time. It was possible that Harry was right. Maybe people would forgive him. Or maybe, Nathan's thoughts darkened fast these days, maybe not. It had taken Nathan a long time, years to get used to his life as it was. The swift cut of rejection had hurt enough at the time when it was sharp and fresh, but it was the way the wound had festered that had been the killer. He had got through it once, barely. He knew with wholehearted certainty that he could not do it again. A group of men jostled out of the living room and down the hall in his direction. Quickly, Nathan opened the nearest door and stepped inside. Ilse's office. He shut the door behind him and breathed out. It was peaceful in there. The noise from the lounge and the hallway nothing more than a muffled hum. He stood for a minute, enjoying the peace, then walked over to the window. On the veranda, Sophie was playing some game with Kylie's kids while Lo looked on. Xander was nearby, leaning against a post and chatting to a girl who looked around his age. She was smiling. At the other side of the yard, someone was standing alone by the graves. Bub. He seemed to have his flies done up at least, Nathan thought, so that was something. His brother wasn't even looking at the earth. He was standing at the fence with his back to the house, staring out into the beyond. Nathan watched for a minute more, then turned and looked at the wall calendar. Bub's mustering plans, written on and then firmly crossed off. Nathan sat down in the spare office chair and reached for the day planner on the desk. He flicked to the section Ilse had pointed out to him and began to read the mustering notes. They were detailed, laying out what a change in the schedule would involve, the pros and cons, risks and rewards. He read it through twice, then leaned back thinking. Bub and Cameron had both been right in their own ways. It was a good plan, but there were snags that needed to be ironed out before anything should happen. Just because Bub was the only one left to argue his case didn't mean Cam hadn't had a point. Nathan started to close the diary, then stopped. Idly, he flipped the pages to the present week. There was almost nothing listed. The activity had been halted by a combination of Christmas and Cameron's death. The days were mostly empty and whatever was written there looked as though it had been added some weeks earlier. He turned back another page, to the day Cameron had gone missing. There were quite a few items written down, listed in Ilse's handwriting. Reminders of several phone calls to be made and a handful of invoices to chase before the end of the year. The weeks before showed more of the same. The day Ilse's husband had died looked to have been just another busy day for her in a busy 6 months. He turned back and forth a few more pages. Everything she had written down appeared to be fairly standard stuff. He made similar phone calls and orders himself. He just didn't record them as efficiently. Ilsa may not have asked for this, Nathan thought, and Bub may not like it, but she would probably be pretty good at running this place if she had to. Now she did have to, he supposed. He was about to close the book again when something at the bottom of a page caught his eye. In the corner was a single tick with a time written next to it. Nathan frowned and turned back a few pages, then a few more. The same mark had been made every day for the whole year, as far as he could see. There was no other information, just the check mark and the numbers. The time recorded varied over 2 hours, coming in anywhere between 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. Nathan stared at it. Somewhere, deep inside, he felt a stirring of recognition. He was still trying to work it out when he heard a noise outside. He looked up as Ilsa came through the door, Duffy at her feet. She jumped when she saw him. My God! She put a hand to her chest. You scared me! Sorry, he said. He held up the planner. Oh, right. Fine. She shut the door behind her and leaned against it, her face flushed. What's wrong? It's my husband's funeral, she snapped. Nathan blinked. He'd never heard that tone from her before. What else? Ilsa paced across the room, dropping into the chair behind her desk. How long have you been hiding in here? Not that long. She nodded. It's strange out there, isn't it? Listening to all those people go on about what a great guy Cameron was and how much they'll miss him. She shook her head. I don't recognize some of them. And a lot of the others I haven't seen in years. They never come around, they never call. They barely knew him, really. No, suppose not. Duffy, who had been sniffing around the desk, ran over to Nathan and he bent down to her. He could feel Ilse's eyes on him. He still felt a touch lightheaded and dehydrated. How many beers had he had? Not many, but more than he felt comfortable having when he was alone with Ilsa. Sorry, he started to stand. I'll get out of your way. Yeah, that sounds about right. The sharp edge in her tone made him stop for a second time. He stared at her, and she stared back. Go on then, don't let me keep you. She jerked her head towards the door. You must have been here with me for, what, 2 whole minutes already? Well past your normal cue to leave. Nathan stood there. Do you want me to stay? He said finally. He waited. Ilsa said nothing for a long time. At last she took a breath. I was talking to Steve about Cameron and... She dropped her eyes. And about Jenna. Did he say something that upset you? Ilsa made a bitter noise. No. The opposite, actually. He didn't say anything. I wanted to know what he thought happened back then, but he wouldn't tell me anything. She looked at Nathan now. You said he took her seriously. So why is he being so secretive now? Well, you said it, Nathan shrugged. It's your husband's funeral. Maybe he's trying to protect you. Me? The flush in her face grew angrier. It's not about protecting me, it's about Cameron. It always is. He's dead and we're all still dancing around him. Don't touch his painting, don't do Bub's plan, don't talk about... She stopped. I'm sorry, I'm finding today very hard. I know. It's all been hard. She took a deep breath. Listen, ignore me. Of course you can leave if you want. Ilsa, it's not... No, I know. I get it, it's fine. She waved a hand. Anyway, you probably should be out there. It's a good time to let people see you. Harry said that too. You should listen to him. And pause. Who knows? Your friend might be looking for you. Melanie. Is that her name? Apparently.
I don't remember her very well.
She remembers you.
Well, he smiled and shrugged. Can you blame her?
At last, Ilse smiled back.
Nathan pushed his chair aside. I should probably go back, though, he said. Otherwise, Harry and Xander will notice I'm missing and read something into it.
Well, good luck, she said. You might not need it as much as you think.
Maybe, but... He could still hear the chatter through the door. It's what you said. I haven't seen most of those people in years. Maybe they can forget what I did, but now I'm supposed to just forget what they did? It's been 10 years. Xander's suffered, my livestock, someone poisoned my dog.
Ilse looked up at that.
Really? That's how Kelly died. I didn't know that.
Yeah, Nathan said. Not that anyone believes me.
Why not?
Because there were no other reports of baiting. Glenn and Xander think I'm paranoid.
Ilse swung a little in her chair. She was frowning.
Wait, remind me, when was this?
About 18 months ago.
Bub went through a phase of baiting dingoes last year.
Nathan stilled.
Did he?
For the bounties, he was talking about moving away and trying to save his money. Cam told him not to do it around our own stock, of course, but Bub was still bringing home a lot of scalps, so it was obvious he was doing it somewhere.
I thought...
She stopped.
Cam said he was going to warn you.
Well, he didn't.
There was a silence.
Nathan could feel pressure building in his temples, and his neck and shoulder muscles were tight.
I thought I was losing my bloody mind, he said. I thought I'd imagined it.
No. Ilse looked at him and slowly shook her head.
No, I don't think so.
I'm sorry, Nathan.
And before you try to tell me Cam wouldn't have forgotten on purpose,
I wasn't going to say that.
Oh?
No. Actually, I expect Cam probably did do it on purpose.
Ilse's gaze was clear and steady. He could be a bit funny about you, and he wouldn't overlook something like that by accident.
Nathan couldn't think what to say to that.
But listen. Ilse sat forward in her seat. Try not to be too angry with Bub, okay? For what it's worth, he must have felt bad about it, because he suddenly stopped baiting overnight. He didn't say why, but it was like he wouldn't touch it anymore.
Nathan felt the tightness spread from his shoulders to his chest. Out of the window, Bub was no longer anywhere in sight. The fence by the grave stood empty. He didn't trust himself to speak.
I better go.
Stay, she said. If you want.
No.
It's okay, thanks.
Just...
What?
Whatever you're thinking of doing, please don't do it now. Not with all these people here.
Nathan stood at the door. Please, Nathan, leave it for now, for me.
He stepped out. The hallway was quiet and he shut the door behind him and bent down. As Duffy licked his face, Nathan thought about the day that Kelly had died. It had felt like the beginning of the end in a lot of ways. It was after that that he'd let his gun license lapse, and he'd turned off his radio for good, and he'd stopped answering his phone to the point where Harry had put the satellite tracker into his hands and ordered him to check in daily.
I'm okay. I'm not okay.
Nathan definitely did not feel okay right then. After Kelly died, he had felt his fingertips starting to slip. He'd been holding on for so long and it was too hard and he was just tired. He had felt himself for the first time simply giving up. Not all at once and not entirely willingly, but a little at a time, slipping away, day after day. And while this was going on, his bloody brothers had known all along what had happened. Nathan looked left towards the busy living room and right towards the yard outside. He'd well and truly missed his chance with bloody Cam, but where would Bub be? Behind him, the office door was still shut. He took a deep breath and made himself think about what Ilse had said.
For me.
He He pictured her still sitting at the desk, and the bell in Nathan's head rang again, suddenly so close and clear that it took him by surprise. Ilse at her desk, working late into the evening after all those long and busy days laid out in her planner. And suddenly, Nathan knew what the daily check marks were in the bottom corner of her diary. Nathan had always assumed it had been Liz who had sent Harry over with the satellite tracker. Two buttons. I'm okay. I'm not okay. Each night he pressed the same one, no matter how strong the urge was to do otherwise. He didn't think it was even monitored anymore. No one had ever mentioned it again. But he pressed the same button every night anyway, if only for himself. I'm okay. The same message, sent up by a fragile beam into the night sky, shooting up to a satellite, then falling all the way back down to Earth. A connection through thousands of kilometres of space. He stood outside the office door, with Ilse on the other side, and for the first time in as long as he could remember, he didn't feel so alone. Chapter 30. Nathan stood outside the office, one hand on the door, debating whether to go back in. He wasn't sure what he would say to Ilse, but he wanted to say something. Thank you, maybe. He was still hovering when he heard a familiar cough in the gloom. He looked up the hallway. Liz was standing outside her bedroom. Her feet were bare, and she was leaning against the doorway for support. She started as she saw Nathan watching her. Oh, you look like your dad for a second. Her gaze was unfocused as he walked over. Everyone's still here. She sounded surprised. You haven't been asleep long.
Oh,
I thought it would all be over. No, not yet, he said, wondering vaguely what medication Steve had given her. Maybe you should lie down again.
I can't. Close my eyes and I think about Cameron. I wake up and I think about Cameron. I may as well be up.
Someone passed by at the other end of the hall, their shadow long. Old Tom. He saw Liz and raised a hand.
I should go and say hello to people.
She didn't move. I don't think anyone would mind if you didn't.
Cameron would mind.
Liz turned to him, her eyes suddenly clearer.
Have you spoken to Steve yet? Made an appointment?
Not yet.
You promised me, Nathan.
Liz took his arm, her fingers surprisingly strong.
I know. I will. Let's go now and...
Grandma? Xander stood at the end of the hall with the girl Nathan had seen him talking to outside. He touched her elbow.
I'll catch up with you in a minute.
The girl looked a little disappointed but nodded. As she wandered away, Xander turned back.
Are you okay, Grandma?
We're going to find Steve. He's outside. Is Bub out there too? Nathan said, feeling a few certain words about a certain dog brewing inside him.
No,
Xander hesitated. He was a bit drunk. Uncle Harry brought him inside for a rest.
Let's go and find Steve, Nathan.
Grandma, you haven't even got shoes on, Xander said, with a note of accusation that Nathan felt was directed his way.
Oh,
Liz looked down.
I don't know.
She scanned the floor, flustered, as though they might appear. They're probably in your bedroom, Nathan said.
Xander, you help your grandma. I'll go and have a word with Steve.
Are you actually going to talk to him? Xander said, as Liz stumbled back into her room. Or are you just saying that to shut her up?
No, I'll talk to him.
Good enough?
Not really.
Xander was looking past him. Nathan sighed.
Are you planning to carry on like this until you leave? Because I'm not sure I'm up for another 3 days of it.
Are you going to think about what I said?
About what? About me moving away?
Mate, we've been through this.
No, we haven't.
You haven't even thought about it.
But yeah, whatever. Like you said, I'll be gone in 3 days and you'll be back on your own again and can do whatever you like.
everything back to how you want it. Mate, this is not how I want it.
Bullshit, you...
There was a soft tumble from the bedroom that sounded like shoes being dropped, and they both looked over. Nathan started for the bedroom door.
I'll go.
Xander stopped him. You're supposed to be getting your head straight. He disappeared into the bedroom, and Nathan stood in the hall alone for a moment. He was lucky, Nathan thought as he turned away. For years, Xander had never given him a moment's grief. He went to school, he was polite to old people, he didn't drink or take drugs, as far as Nathan knew anyway. He was naturally good-hearted in a way that Nathan was surprised had come from he and Jackie. If the kid was pushing back now, it wasn't before time. Still, it had felt easier when he was younger. He could still clearly remember that day more than 16 years ago now when Jackie had told him she was pregnant. Her eyes had gleamed with delight, and they'd both managed to pretend for a while that their marriage wasn't already on shaky ground. Nathan heard the toilet flush in the small bathroom down the hall. The chatter still coming from the living room had taken on a slightly different tone. Things were starting to wrap up, Nathan thought. People would be leaving soon. A tray of half-eaten sandwiches had been abandoned precariously on the table by the phone, threatening to topple off. He picked it up and headed for the kitchen. Jackie hadn't been smiling for long, though. It had been a hard pregnancy. She'd had severe morning sickness, gagging at the sight of anything but plain rice. It had lasted most of the day and far past the week when the books had promised it would stop. She had lain on the couch in the heat with a bucket by her side, waving away anything Nathan could think to offer. As Nathan passed the toilet, he heard the lock turn on the door and Katie came out, pale-faced and clutching a balled-up tissue. "How are you feeling?" He stopped as her bloodshot gaze fell on the sandwich tray in his hands and she gagged in a way he had last seen more than 16 years earlier. "Oh." He breathed out. They stared at each other for a long moment, and he knew by the look in her eyes that he had guessed right. "Congratulations." She didn't say anything, just pressed the tissue to her lips. "Go and sit down," he said. "I'll find Simon for you."
"Wait, no."
Her hand shot out and clutched him above the wrist. Her grip was so firm it was nearly painful. "Don't get Simon."
"Why not?"
Katie wiped the corners of her mouth with the back of her hand.
"For God's sake, what do you think?"
For a moment, Nathan tried to convince himself that it could be Bub or even Harry at a push. "Cameron," he said finally. She nodded. "Definitely?"
"Yes."
No chance at all it could be Simon. Her mouth twitched. "Simon and I haven't been getting along for a while now." A fresh sheen of sweat had broken out across her forehead. "Did Cameron know?"
"Yes."
Through the door to the living room, the crowd shifted and Nathan could see the top of the backpacker's dark head. The sound of laughter and chatter rose and fell. "Do you want to speak to the nurse?" he said finally. Katie shook her head. "Someone else?" She gave a dry laugh. "Like who? Who else is there to talk to around here? There's no one." Nathan hesitated, then took Katie's arm and swiftly led her up the hall. "Come in here." He opened the door to Xander's bedroom. "Tell me." She sat on the bed and he leaned against the wall. He waited while she picked at the faded floral bedspread. "Simon's in debt," she said finally. "He has a plumbing business back home, and I knew things were tough, but it turns out it was worse than I thought. Worse than he told me anyway. He owes quite a lot to quite a lot of people, and I don't know what he's going to do about it." She shook her head in frustration. "The point is we really need the money, or he does anyway."
"Okay."
"I didn't want to come and work here." Katie's fingers were still plucking at the quilt. "I'm sorry. But it's too lonely and I've had enough of that on the properties out west. I wanted to go home. But Simon said we needed to save as much money as we could, otherwise we'd have nothing at all when we got back." She paused. "I don't know if that's true or not." I don't know what to believe from him anymore. So Simon wanted to take the work here.
Yeah.
We met Cameron in the pub in town, like we said, but... Katie looked at her hand, still picking.
I'm sorry, I know he's your brother, but I didn't have a good feeling about it.
In what way?
Just...
Katie frowned. I knew that it wasn't Simon that he was hiring. Something about the way he looked at me. I'm not even a teacher. She looked up.
And I told Cameron that.
Simon was annoyed with me later. He said I should have lied to get the job, but Cameron didn't mind. He said the work was easy, that it was hard to find people and they needed the help for his girls. And if anyone asked, his wife, whoever, he'd say I was qualified. She balled her hands into fists, trying to still them. So I owed him a favour before I even started. Nathan thought about his brother, what it felt like to need something from him. Simon didn't have a problem with this, though, he said. Simon really needs the money, and Cam was offering good wages, more than we were making before, and cash in hand. So we agreed, and I thought maybe it would be okay. I mean, I'm thinking it's a family property, he's got his wife and his kids running round, and it was fine for about 3 weeks, which was longer than I'd expected, actually. Then what? Nathan frowned. Cam came on to you?
No, not exactly. He was smart about it, I'll give him that. He was always friendly, asking me questions and actually listening to the answers. I wondered if maybe I'd got him wrong, but it meant he ended up knowing all kinds of things about me. What I liked, what I found funny, my weak spots, like missing home. I was alone with him a lot. There'd always be some legit reason and nothing exactly happened. I just felt a bit weird about it.
Did you tell anyone? Simon, obviously, but Simon really needs the money. Yeah, I'm getting that.
He said I should try not to be alone with Cameron, keep things strictly professional and there'd be no problems. Something had happened at our last place out west, something...
Katie paused. A bit worse than this, I guess. A guy out there who was a bit too keen. I complained, and me and Simon both got sacked, so he wanted me to keep quiet this time. He couldn't really see what the problem was, and I couldn't really explain. I stopped telling him, and he never asked.
Right.
Cameron started flirting, making comments, kind of sexual stuff, you know. If I got uncomfortable, he would act surprised, like I'd imagined it or seen something I wanted to see. She shook her head. But I didn't imagine it or want it. Katie's fingers started plucking again at the bed cover. Long way from home, Nathan thought. Few local connections, if any. Backpackers might enjoy the flexibility of casual postings, but it left them vulnerable in other ways. Everyone knew that. Cameron knew that. And Nathan found himself thinking again of that other backpacker more than 20 years ago, with her messy braid glowing orange by the flickering light of the campfire. The blunted edges of the memory had suddenly become cutthroat sharp, threatening to slip and slice him if not handled with care. When I told Cameron that I wasn't interested, he laughed, Katie was saying. Like I was overreacting and couldn't take a joke, or we were both playing a game and knew how it would end. The sharp edges did slip now, just a little. You've seen this before. A campfire, a flirtation, the air pungent with possibility.
I told Simon we should leave, Katie said. But he didn't want to. I thought about just heading off myself, but the car and the caravan belonged to him. I couldn't just leave him stranded. We've been together 3 years, and he loves me. He just couldn't understand what the big deal was. He thought Cam was a great boss. It was good that he was friendly. Why couldn't I take it as a compliment?
She shook her head.
He doesn't know what it was like, though. It was exhausting. Cameron was around every day and he wasn't finding it fun anymore. He still joked around, but I could tell he was getting frustrated. Like he'd brought us here, and now I wasn't keeping up my end of the deal.
You have seen this before. Not exactly, Nathan told himself. He stopped. Not exactly, but a version of it. More immature, far less refined, but the basic elements. An intense campfire flirtation. Patient persistence. A backpacker grateful for someone to talk to among a crowd of strangers. The gentle manipulation and focused attention that meant when she looked up hours later, she had spoken to no one else and made only one connection all night. The groaning weight of expectation. You have seen this before. I'm sorry. Nathan was not sure who he was talking to. Katie looked down, and he realized there were tears in her eyes. I was homesick and lonely and miles from anywhere. I felt completely worn down. Everyone wanted something from me. Simon wanted me to keep Cameron happy. Cameron wanted me to keep him happy. I was so sick of it. And eventually, she dragged the back of her hand across her face. Eventually, it was just easier to say yes than no. So I did. I let him fuck me on the beanbag in his daughter's schoolroom. 6 times in total. The room was quiet for a long time, and Nathan could hear muffled voices in the hall. I'm sorry, he said again, definitely talking to Katie this time. It's not your fault, it's my fault. I'm the one who gave in. Her shoulders slouched. And after all that, it didn't even help things. Cameron seemed disgusted with me or with himself. It didn't stop him coming back for more, but I think he felt ashamed for 5 minutes and he blamed me for that. And then, she gestured down at her flat stomach and shook her head. If he wasn't happy before, he definitely wasn't happy about this. When did you tell him? As soon as I realized myself, about 2 weeks before he... She swallowed. Before he died. He was angry. Told me I had to get rid of it. Which was fine by me. There's no way I wanted this either. That's what he was talking to me about on the morning he went missing. He'd got me an appointment at the big medical center next week. Her eyes were clear now. That's why I'm sure he was planning to come back, though. He was telling me I had to go through with the appointment. I was going to anyway, but if he was about to disappear, why would he care? It was a good question, Nathan thought, although it at least answered another one. The medical center is the one in St. Helens? Yeah. And you had somewhere to stay up there? A couple of nights in one of the hotels. And Cameron called to arrange that. She nodded, and Nathan pictured the office phone bill. 2 calls to St. Helens, the week before Cameron died. And Simon definitely doesn't know, he said. Not yet. She pressed her lips into a line. Not at all, I hope. What will you tell him about the appointment? Nothing. I'll make something up. He's squeamish. He won't ask for details. But I need to get it done. He's not a complete idiot either. If he finds out, he'll finish with me. Nathan opened his mouth, then shut it again. The despair on Katie's face made him open it again. Would that be so bad? He shrugged when she looked surprised. Your call. But I'm not sure you owe Simon anything. We've been together for 3 years. She held up her left hand. We're engaged. So what? People can change their minds. My ex-wife and I were married for longer than that before she left. He gave her a small smile. She's doing great by all accounts. Never been happier. Katie hesitated. I don't know. I'll think about it. Nathan pushed himself away from the wall. Anyway, look, take it easy from here. We'll cope without you. Thank you. Really. Honestly, don't know how it came to this. I was just so confused and lonely. She breathed out. Thank you for believing me. He might not have, Nathan knew in the most honest part of himself as he opened the bedroom door. He might very well not have, had it not felt so unnervingly familiar. Maybe he should have paid more attention to the warning signs back when he had the chance. There was nothing he could do about that, but he could heed them now. It was time to find Steve. Chapter 31. Mate, what do you want me to tell you? That Cameron attacked a backpacker on the sand dunes after they both got drunk at a party? Steve's gaze was firm and steady, and Nathan had trouble meeting it. No. Jesus, I don't know. Nathan ran his hand through his hair and took a breath. The air was cloying. He had found the nurse in the living room and gripped his arm. He'd seen Liz notice, with a spark of hope in her eye, as Nathan wordlessly led Steve out onto the veranda and around the side of the house, where they could talk in peace. Now, though, he was finding the conversation exceptionally difficult. I just want to know what really happened, Nathan said. I can't tell you that, mate. No, listen. Steve raised a finger to cut him off. I'll tell you exactly what I told Ilsa earlier. I'm guessing it's no coincidence you're both asking about this. I don't know what happened that night any more than you do. Nathan made a frustrated noise. But at the time, yeah, at the time, I had an opinion, same as everyone else. Well, that's what I'm asking. But it's important that you understand. Understood. Get to the point. Steve squinted into the fierce afternoon light. They could see the graves in the distance, one old, one brand new. He ran his tongue over his teeth. There was some light bruising on Jenna's inner thighs and a mark on her upper arm. Here. Steve touched the soft flesh below his own armpit. No tearing or bleeding to speak of, but that doesn't necessarily tell you anything either way. But it looked like it had been... what? Nathan's mouth felt dry and gritty. Rough? Possibly. Or possibly just clumsy. Inexperienced, even. Some people bruise in situations where others might not. Steve pressed his lips together. But that's what I'm trying to tell you. Physically, I would say it wasn't possible to draw a conclusion. The benefit of the doubt would probably fall Cameron's way, in fact. Nathan waited for a trickle of relief that never came. He shifted his weight. He could see some movement around the front of the house, the odd person wandering out, making a move to leave. He turned back to Steve. So what else was there? Honestly, nothing. It came down to what she said. Steve watched as a few more people came out into the open air, shielding their eyes against the sun. Her boyfriend, this real soft-spoken English boy, had convinced her to come in. And I know most people thought that was because he was angry, but that wasn't the case as far as I saw. He was worried about her, a bit scared even, like he didn't have a clue what to do. He probably didn't. I think he was doing a degree in botany or something. I remember he kept blinking at me behind his glasses like I was going to be able to fix everything. Steve shook his head. I don't think they'd been together very long. Anyway, he waited outside while Jenna and I talked, so whatever she told me wasn't for his benefit. And what did she tell you? You already know, Steve said. You've heard the story that she'd been drinking and she'd started flirting with this kid because she was bored and didn't know anyone and she was annoyed her boyfriend had stayed behind at the station rather than come to the party. Cameron was young. Steve frowned as he remembered. She told me she'd thought he was harmless. It was all just a bit of fun to pass the time. And there were a lot of other people around, so she said she'd felt safe. I remember her saying that. The crowd at the front of the house was growing. Nathan could hear car doors slamming and engines starting up, but didn't look over. He stayed focused on Steve. Then Cameron offered to drive her back to town. The nurse's voice had a darker note now. She'd been drinking, she said, and was feeling a bit unsteady. Apparently she'd thought she was following him to the car, but realised she was actually alone with him on the dunes. He started kissing her, picking up where they'd left off around the campfire. Jenna told him she'd had enough and asked him to stop. Steve looked at Nathan. Cameron didn't want to. And I know he was only 17, but he wasn't a child, physically at least. Nathan thought of the calf, struggling underneath him. A knee in the right place, an elbow, a little bit of pressure. Struggling could be managed. Jenna couldn't get away from him. Honestly, she might not even have tried. She said she froze. I think she felt a bit ashamed about that, but it's actually a very common response. Either way, she was out there on her own in the dark with this big, insistent bloke. He looked at Nathan. Someone can decide it's in their best interest to agree to something. But a choice is only really a choice if there's a genuine alternative. Otherwise, it's manipulation. It's taking advantage. He shrugged. It's rape. Nathan thought of Katie. It was easier to say yes than no. Steve was watching him. I'm sorry. I know that's hard to hear. A burst of laughter caught on the breeze, raucous and deep. Nathan looked over this time. Whole groups of guests were spilling out now. He saw Melanie, her hair glowing red gold in the sunshine. She caught his eye and waved. I'm heading off now, she called, pointing to a nice-looking Land Cruiser where a couple of the Atherton crowd were already climbing aboard. It was good to see you. Yeah, you too. She smiled at him, and he had a sudden image of her, younger, and smiling just like that as she sipped a drink under a night sky. Had she been at the party by the sand dunes that night, Nathan wondered. He honestly couldn't remember. He realized she was still waiting, and he cleared his throat. Maybe see you again. I hope so. She looked pleased, and with another wave, jogged towards the waiting vehicle. Nathan turned his attention back to Steve, who was still watching her leave. You should call her, Steve said. She'd do you far more good than anything I could prescribe. So I keep getting told. Nathan waved an impatient hand. Listen, if Jenna was so scared, why did she let Cam drive her back to town afterwards? How many kilometres from the dunes to town? 12. Long way to walk at night when you're shaken up and alone. She could have asked someone else. I thought she didn't know anyone else there. Nathan said nothing. She hadn't. Only Jackie, who had left earlier with him. He imagined Cam and Jenna driving back into town, pulling up outside the pub, where they were seen by Rob, the owner. Rob saw Jenna kissing Cam in the car back in town, he said finally. Did he? Steve's eyes were watchful. Or did he see Cameron kiss Jenna and her allow it so she'd be let out of the car? Jesus, Steve, how am I supposed to know that? You're not, just like I don't know. And Rob, looking out of his pub window, doesn't know either. Like I said, an opinion is the best I can offer. Nathan frowned. He could see Harry among the crowd now alongside Liz. She was clinging to him like a lifeboat as people reached out to grip her hand and pull her towards them in an embrace. There were waves and calls of farewell. Harry caught Nathan's eye and beckoned him over. Nathan ignored him. Jenna took her time telling anyone. He turned back to Steve, surprised by the defensive note in his tone. She didn't help herself there by pretending everything was fine. Steve almost smiled but caught himself. What? Nathan demanded. Just that's bloody rich coming from you, Steve said. Nathan, people pretend to themselves that they are fine all the time, every day, and for years on end. He gestured at the departing crowd, sweating in their dusty funeral clothes and with hours of driving ahead of them. Life out here is hard. We all try to get through the best way we can, but trust me, there's not a single person here who isn't lying to themselves about something. Ilse's head appeared amid the group, loose strands of hair plastered to the sides of her hot face. Steve's eyes fell on her for a second, and he took a breath as if to say something, then appeared to change his mind, releasing the air from his lungs. He turned back to Nathan. You are one of the worst around here for that kind of thing by an absolute mile. You're so far from fine that you're terrified to admit to yourself how bad things have got, let alone admit it to your mum or your son. They've both asked me to get you in for a chat and a checkup, by the way. I know. Okay. Really? You'll come in. No argument. Nathan shook his head. He knew he had crossed a line somewhere, maybe in the last few hours, maybe in the past few years, and suddenly that line seemed a very long way away. He didn't want to be alone on this side of it anymore. He just hoped he could still find his way back. More people came out of the house, Simon among them. Katie followed a few paces behind. They stood slightly apart, both from the crowd and each other, Katie occasionally glancing at Simon with a faintly confused look, as though she was trying to work something out. She did not turn once towards Ilse, who was wandering from group to group, looking overwhelmed. If this had all been dealt with at the time, it would have been better for everyone, Nathan said. Across the yard, the graves lay silent and lonely. There was no one around them now. All the activity was with the living, including Cam. Steve nodded. I sometimes think I should have encouraged Jenna to make things formal straight away, but it was my first posting out here. I was younger, or I hadn't been qualified for long. I'd do things differently now, but at the time I did my best. Jenna said she needed to think about it, and I felt I should respect that. Then, of course, she'd left town a couple of days later, so the problem went with her. Steve shrugged. But you'd know the reasons for that better than I would anyway. Nathan frowned. What are you talking about? I don't know why she decided to leave. It was Steve's turn to frown. Don't you? Of course not. How would I? The last of the crowd were climbing into their cars now. Cameron's farewell was coming to an end. You might not think you know, Nathan. Steve shot a pointed look across the yard to the two graves under the gum tree. But can you really not take a guess? Nathan opened his mouth to protest, then stopped as he heard the distant thud of a car door and another one. He shut his mouth slowly. He'd been in that same yard 23 years ago, not far from the spot Steve was looking at now. Nathan and 7-year-old Bub had been messing around with a cricket bat over by the fence there, back when the ground was still clear and undisturbed. Bub had been practicing his bowling as Nathan tapped the ball back in his direction. It had been a full day since the terrible phone call from the town sergeant had come through, and Nathan had stood sullenly with Cameron in the hall while their dad demanded answers. A day since Nathan had been a fraction late coming to his brother's defence, and since Cam had last spoken to him. Nathan had let the cricket ball sail past him as Carl Bright's dirty four-wheel drive had roared up the driveway and shuddered to a halt outside the house. Nathan lingered, keeping his distance, as he always did when he had a choice in the matter. Carl had been gone most of the day. That was not unusual. Nor was the fact that he'd failed to write down where he was going. He was bristling as he slammed his car door shut with a force that shook the vehicle. Cameron had come out of the house. Nathan had had the urge to whistle sharply, the way they'd always used to warn each other over the years. Watch out, Dad's coming. He didn't, though. He wasn't sure what was going to happen, and if possible, he didn't want Bub to see. Instead, Nathan tossed the cricket ball in the air and lobbed the bat at it, sending the ball a fair distance in the other direction. Bub scampered after it, swearing and complaining. Anyway, it was too late for a warning. Nathan could tell as he turned back. Cameron had seen their dad pounding across the driveway towards him, and their dad had clearly seen Cam. Cameron had paused, and then, instead of wheeling around and disappearing into the warren of the house, he walked down the wooden steps and waited at the bottom. As Carl Bright approached his middle son, he barely broke stride. He brushed past him, turning his head just once. And before disappearing into the house, Carl gave Cameron a single, sharp nod. It's done.
Chapter 32. It's done. Of course it was. Carl Bright never nodded at his sons, not in greeting, certainly not in approval. He had disappeared from the property for a few hours, and the very next morning Jenna and her boyfriend had gone to their employer and told him they were leaving. No reason and no notice. They just wanted to be on their way. Keith had tried to talk them out of it, Jackie told Nathan later. Keith had, of course, heard about the events at the party and had asked if that had had anything to do with anything. No, Jenna had said. It was a misunderstanding. She had been embarrassed and had blown things out of proportion. Nathan sat on the couch in the living room now, staring at the Christmas tree bulbs glowing weakly in the dying afternoon light. The debris of the wake lay scattered around, empty plates and cups cluttering every surface. Steve had been among the very last to leave, pressing an appointment card into Nathan's palm. By the time he'd driven off, the rest of the family had drifted their separate ways, rattling around a house that suddenly felt too big and empty. Keith's attitude towards Nathan had markedly changed after Jenna left in such a hurry. Nathan didn't see Keith that often, so it took a while for him to fully notice. But where Keith had always been civil, if a little cold, he suddenly became hard and unpleasant. Nathan's visits were greeted with increasing hostility, until eventually he and Jackie stopped meeting at her house. They still met, though, and had laughed with the intoxication of forbidden intimacy at Keith's disapproval. Nathan could still remember Keith's face all those years ago at the service station. I know what men like you do. Maybe, Nathan thought as he sat on the couch. Now, the bloke had actually had a point. The thought was deeply depressing. There was a noise in the hall and Bub appeared in the doorway. His shirt was creased and he was squinting into the low light.
Where is everybody?
Gone, it's over.
Already?
You've been asleep for a while.
Ah.
Bub flopped down on the couch, and Nathan could smell the alcohol coming off him. Bub rubbed a hand over his face, then peered at Nathan with bloodshot eyes.
What's wrong with you?
Nathan, who couldn't think where to start, looked at his brother and immediately pictured his dog Kelly lying dead in his hands. It had slipped to the back of his mind in the last couple of hours, but now jostled its way forward once more. He opened his mouth, then with an effort, took a breath. Nothing.
Doesn't look like nothing.
Nathan shrugged. Bub yawned and slid his eyes around the room.
Lots of people came, eh?
Yeah.
Do you think that many would come out for us?
Nope.
Me neither.
Bub sounded resigned.
Bloody Cam. I don't know how he did it. He was as much of a dickhead as the rest of us. He was just better at hiding it.
That's what you think?
Yeah, of course.
Bub stared at the wall for a minute. His voice was rough and his words still a little slurred.
It's the truth, isn't it? I mean, Dad was a dickhead, Cam was a dickhead, I am, you are.
Nathan almost laughed. I'm not arguing that, mate, but some things are a lot worse than other things.
If you say so.
Bub suppressed a small burp. I do.
Well, you would know.
Bub hauled himself off the couch and over to the TV.
I mean, Cam could be an arsehole, but you left a bloke for dead.
That was 10 years ago, and he didn't actually die.
No thanks to you, but maybe that's not your fault. Like I said, family are dickheads. Not much you can do about that.
Bub stood over the TV, untangling the wires for his computer game. People can change, mate.
Okay.
No, listen. I am nowhere near as bad as Cam.
Righto.
Bub didn't look up.
Try to remember that when you and Ilsa are screwing me over with this place.
Jesus, Bub, no one's trying to screw you over.
We'll see.
Hey. Nathan lowered his voice. What exactly is your problem?
I don't know. Not knowing what's going on with my own property for one thing. Never having a say for another. Having you and Cam for brothers for a third.
Well, you've only got me now. So there's at least some good news for you.
Nathan could feel the anger building in him. He stood to leave.
By the way, you got anything you want to tell me about my dog?
Which dog?
You know which bloody dog. Kelly.
Bub's hands went still on the computer wires.
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
No?
No.
Nothing to say about some baiting happening around my place? Not ringing any bells in there?
Nathan reached out and tapped Bub on the side of the head. Bub swiped his arm away.
Get fucked! No, you get fucked.
Kelly was in a lot of pain at the end. I had to watch it happen. There was nothing I could do to help her. Nathan could feel the tears prickling behind his eyes and he blinked hard.
She's only a dog.
I loved her. She was my best friend.
Then you need to get out more.
Nathan made himself take a breath. He felt a rage building that he knew wasn't all about Bub. Still, Bub was right in front of him.
All right, he said, that's fine. But when you and me and Ilsa sit down to talk about this place, I'm going to look at you and think about what you did to Kelly, and then I'm going to think long and hard about how I can best repay you for that.
He stepped closer to his brother.
You're wondering why Cam didn't bloody trust you with this place or money or anything else? Take a look at yourself. He might have been an asshole, worse than that, but he didn't have rocks in his head.
Nathan didn't see the bloke coming until it was almost too late. It caught the side of his head and sent him stumbling backwards. He felt another hard jab under his ribs, and Bub's arm was suddenly tight around his neck.
Fuck you, mate, and Cam!
Bub's breath was alcoholic on his face.
You think you can turn up here and push me around and start acting like you know what's best for everyone?
Nathan felt the air knocked from him as they banged against the wall and lost their balance, hitting the floor with a thud. A loose fist connected with his cheek, and Nathan put his hand up too late as another blow sailed through.
You and Cam always bloody think you're better than me, but you're not, are you? He's dead and you're a total fuck-up.
Bub landed a sharp punch over Nathan's eye and his face was angry and slick with sweat. There was something reckless in his eyes as he pulled his fist back again.
You think if you take Cam's place and start behaving like him, people will respect you?
Bub was saying.
No.
Nathan tried to push him off, banging his head against the floorboards. He could see movement at the doorway.
You think they'll suddenly talk to you in town? Get off!
Nathan shoved back and they rolled over, hitting the couch and the coffee table. Something fell off and shattered against the floor.
Hey!
A shout from Harry as Liz's voice also cried out from somewhere.
They don't ignore you because you're not Cam, mate.
Bub's words were hot in his ear.
It's not even because you left what's-his-name for dead. They don't talk to you because you got a bit weird, mate.